Hello there. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your throat-clearing, sometimes humble host. Didn't know the mic was up. For this Wednesday edition of the podcast, it's October 28th, 2020. Good to have you along. Thanks for being there. Holy moly. I was kind of preoccupied. It's been one of those days where I've just been scrambling before I get started because I had figured out a technical thing that I wanted to accomplish. And so I got sidetracked on that. And once I got that figured out and I got it working, and then that relates to another project, an outside project that I was having some difficulty with yesterday. And I thought, there's a way to make this work. I know there's a way to make this work. And then, you know how sometimes you're laying in bed in the dark of night and ding, the idea hits you and you realize, oh yeah, that's how to do it. And that's what happened to me last night. I realized as I was drifting off to sleep, I realized, oh, that's the way to fix that problem. And so, and you tell yourself, remember this. And today, this morning, when I woke up, I remembered. So as soon as I got to the studio, I started working on that problem and I finished that and was in the process of pulling all of my little ducks into a nice, neat row. And then I started scanning my email to see if I had anything new that might be interesting. And all of a sudden, I'm scanning email while the intro music is playing. And I'm not aware that in the process of working on this little technical problem, I left the mic up. I didn't even know. So anyway, there we are. But here we are. It's the middle of the week. It's Wednesday. Some still call it hump day. What day is it? But it is the 28th day of October 2020, and all anybody on the right is going to be talking about today is last night's Tucker Carlson show. I'll be talking about more than that, but we will touch on Tucker Carlson's show, and we will talk about it a bit today, just not the entire hour, okay? Because it's there. It's on YouTube. If you didn't watch it last night, then your homework assignment for the day is to come back here tomorrow having watched Tucker Carlson's show from last night. It's on YouTube. Go find it and watch it. Just search Tucker Carlson from last night's, it'll pop up. It'll be there. You have to watch it because I got to be honest with you. What we saw last night is not going to change anyone's mind. It's not going to, I don't know. It may change some minds now that I think about it, because there was some stuff brought out into the open last night that the press has been ignoring intentionally. And their excuse has been, it can't be confirmed. It can't be corroborated. It can't be verified. Well, it has been confirmed. It has been verified. And it was laid out for everybody to see last night. Now, what's happening after last night is the leftist press is saying, well, he can say whatever he wants, but he can't tie Joe Biden to anything he claims because Joe Biden's name is not on anything. He has no legal ties to this, et cetera, et cetera. And that was actually covered during the discussion with Tucker Carlson last night, because as this guy Bob Alinsky was telling his story, he said that one of the things that he was told, he said he was concerned. Aren't these people going to get in trouble? Isn't this going to cause legal problems for Joe Biden and everybody around him? And the guy just kind of laughed a little and said, plausible deniability. So they set everything up so that Joe Biden was not directly attached, was not legally involved, was not at the center of things, but he was involved. He was in meetings with them. He knew what was happening. He discussed the processes. He just wasn't legally involved. His name is not on any contracts. His bank account was not involved. He was not the direct recipient of the finances. Others in the little group received the money and held it for him. And so he has plausible deniability, which is something that every crime family engages in. it's plausible deniability, so that when they go to court, nobody can prove their direct connection to things that went on. And thus, they have legal loopholes to dive through to protect themselves. And thus, we have the American press defending Joe Biden because he has managed to isolate himself with the same tactic used by criminals for generations. It's just absolutely amazing. And I encourage you, this is probably going to be the extent of the talking about Tucker Carlson's interview last night and this entire matter. I want you to go watch that program. If you haven't seen it, you need to go into the rest of your day today informed. So when we get through here, go to YouTube. If you have to do it and you're working, you can just listen. Just plug in your earbuds and drop your phone in your pocket. Go to YouTube on your phone and play the video and listen as you work. And you will find yourself from time to time stopping and realizing your mouth's hanging open. Because what is revealed in this interview is jaw-dropping. And the man being interviewed comes across as completely legitimate. He is a guy with an impeccable record and a security clearance, and he's completely compelling, and you should watch it. And that's what I have to say about that. The only other thing I can say is don't look for the story in the mainstream press. Because let me just do a thing right here, okay, while I'm thinking about it. CNN.com. Let's go over to CNN. And while CNN's coming up, oh, there we are. Let's see here. Let's see. A week away from Election Day, Trump greeted a mostly maskless crowd in the epicenter of the country's surge. You know what's funny about that is everybody in that crowd was tested. They not medically tested, but they were screened with, they have people who at the admission gates who take your temperature, and they scan everybody who comes in. Everybody's given a mask. Everybody's asked, please wear the mask. It is not a mostly maskless crowd. When you actually go find pictures, you'll find that's not true. But I digress. I'm looking here at what they have. Let's see. There's that story, virus updates, election updates. Election updates. 2020 could be the year of the young voter. Understanding mail-in voting in the U.S. Some Pennsylvania counties will count mail-in ballots last. Acosta asks, did you blow it on COVID-19? Jim Acosta should be tied up and put on a barge in the Pacific and pushed off away from the coast of the United States. How Arizona complicates Trump's re-election bid. Analyst reveals who poses biggest legal threat to Trump if he loses election. What else? Tax records show Trump had over $270 million in debt forgiven after failing to repay. This is what they won't tell you about that particular story is that sometimes this happens in business, and you work out arrangements and you organize things, and that's just how it goes. And sometimes you end up filing bankruptcy, and that is the law. You can do that. Many, many businesses have. Obama to join Biden on campaign trail for final weekend push. They're not allowed to vote, but they're racing to make sure you do. And I'm looking through everything here. I'm looking. I'm trying to find anything about the whistleblower blowing the whistle on Joe Biden, and I'm scanning down the entire front page of CNN.com, and I don't see anything. Anything. There's nothing there. Nothing whatsoever. So let's try the same thing with MSNBC.com. And as it loads up, let's see. Wow. Oh, leave me alone. Just, please. There we go. It's nagging me about ads. I don't care about your ads. I just want to see. Let's see here. Losing the war on COVID-19 sounds a lot like losing the war on terror. Trump's attack on American government won't end if he loses. His latest order proves it. Trump is tired of hearing BIPOC complain about their loved ones dying from coronavirus. The data predicts Biden win. my election anxiety is violently rejecting that. That's an interesting take. I may have to open that one up. Joe Biden needs to embrace FDR's actual plan for the Supreme Court. Now, stop and think about that, because FDR wanted to expand the Supreme Court with progressive justices. He wanted to change. I guess the best way the best way I can think to illustrate is that what FDR wanted to do and what the progressives today want to do is like at a football game. They want to increase the number of officials on the field, but all of the additional officials graduated from one of the two schools that are playing each other. That's what they want to do. Now, why does the most prominent democracy in the world make voting so hard? Well, because we're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. You morons. Let's see. The Boogaloo Boys attack law enforcement and Trump is silent. Ah, man. These people are mentally deranged. And that's MSNBC.com. Where else could we go to? anyway, that's an idea. That's just a representation. They're all ignoring this. Nobody is paying any attention to it. The only place you're going to find any stories about this from last night is over at Fox News. And if we go to foxnews.com, let's see, Trump barnstorms battleground state with back-to-back rallies as Biden heads home to Delaware. Tony Bobulinski, Biden's denials of involvement with son's business, blatant lie. And I've just looked at three news sites, and this is the first one to mention it. And it's not at the top of the page, but it's on the front page. And it has a photo to attract your attention, which is better than the rest of them do. So just know that today, the only way you're going to hear about Tony Bobulinski and his interview with Tucker Carlson is if you go over to Fox News or you're listening to conservative talk radio. It's the only way, because the rest are ignoring it, and they're ignoring it intentionally because it harms Joe Biden. It reveals the fact that the Biden family constructed a scenario with plausible deniability for Joe Biden so that he could enrich himself off of foreign trade with communist countries which oppress their people. Actually, China goes so far as to actually harvest organs from people who are on their nobody list. It's just vile. And he is going to enrich himself with deals with people heavily connected with the communist Chinese. And they're all going to cover for him because they're all so desperate to get rid of this horrible orange man who's destroying their democracy, which never has been and never was intended to be a pure democracy. Part of what we'll talk about today is why it is not a democracy. One of the pieces that I have lined up in the list is about the Electoral College, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. Not right up front, but we'll talk about it very soon. Because so many people don't understand the Electoral College. And trust me, this is not going to be a college lecture. It's not going to be something you're going to force yourself to stay awake through. It's short and sweet. It's to the point. It's just an illustration, an explanation. Because so many people really don't understand why or how with the Electoral College. And I think it's important that we do. And also, there's resource material. It'll be in the show notes today. Something that you can draw from, that you can share with friends so they can understand how the Electoral College works. It's very important. It's important to know this, especially now, when your liberal friends are all going to be screaming, popular vote, popular vote, popular vote, when the United States of America has no such thing as the popular vote when it comes to national elections for the President of the United States. And they don't know that. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. You're there. Kimber the Wonder Dog is over there in her chair. It's the Wednesday edition. Thanks again for being there. Glad you're along for the ride. Thanks for subscribing to the podcast and sharing with your friends. If you're listening on Facebook Live, you can subscribe. Just go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. The links are there. Actually, it's available seriously wherever you can find podcasts. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Google Podcasts. It's on Amazon Podcasts. It's on iHeartRadio. It's on TuneIn Radio. It's everywhere. If you can find a podcast, odds are you can find this podcast where you find your podcast. So look it up today and subscribe and get it delivered directly to your mobile device every single day. You know, I like to start with something absurd, and that first segment was just really, honestly, about angry absurdity, because it's just so stupid that all of these news sources. And by the way, during the break, I went over to the BBC, nothing there. Went to CNBC, nothing there. Nobody is paying any attention to what happened on America's top-ranked cable show. Over 5 million people tuned in last night and watched the interview as it transpired on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News. Over 5 million people. The biggest audience of anything on cable. And not one news source besides Fox News is saying anything about it. Nobody. And it's not just because Fox is the competition. It's because it's a real story, and all they can do is ignore it until they can come up with some way to ridicule it and deny it. That's all they can do. And that's absurd. And here's something else, real quickly, that's absurd. You're familiar with IKEA, right? A lot of cities have an IKEA store. Jane and I went to IKEA a while back, and we had to drive to Atlanta to go to an IKEA store because we don't have one here in the Birmingham area. But we went to IKEA. It's an interesting place. I wish it was closer, because I would go to IKEA for handfuls of things, because we saw things while we were in IKEA, and I said, wow, that's awesome. Wow, that's cheap. Wow, look at that. If we knew somebody just getting married, setting up an apartment, something, we would come to IKEA, and we would just buy them a gift card to IKEA. Go and furnish your place. Get all of the kitchen stuff you need. Take care of your plates and silverware, and it's all, they've got everything. And I was just flabbergasted by it and very impressed. And once I understood the purchasing process, it made perfect sense to me, because I was really confused for a while. How do you get this stuff? Except for the little handheld stuff. I mean, the little small stuff, the bigger stuff, you have to pick it up. They have a warehouse at the end of the store. You go through the whole store, and there's a big warehouse area, and there's a computer there, and you put in what you want to find, and it tells you where in the shelves in the warehouse to grab your purchase from. And once I understood that, oh, well, that makes sense. That way you're not carrying it all through the store. You're just getting it on your way to the register. So IKEA is ubiquitous. They have a catalog that's put out every year. It's almost like the catalog. Some people treat it like a coffee table book, you know? But they're delaying the release of the annual catalog because they want to remove a potentially offensive photograph in their catalog. And that photograph shows a black guy assembling furniture while he's wearing a shirt. And some say that shirt resembles an inmate's uniform. Quartz at Work writes, with a print run of over 200 million copies, IKEA's meticulously constructed catalog ranks up with the Bible, the Quran, and the Harry Potter series in terms of mass circulation. Fox Business says the image shows the black man wearing a splint on his finger and a cast on his leg while positioned near a coffee table in need of assembly. The shirt he's wearing, which was reportedly emblazoned with the number 45678, raised eyebrows. So he's got a number on his shirt, and it's a sequential number, 45678. It's just a piece of fashion. You see this kind of stuff all the time. You see people wearing shirts with just a phrase, a disconnected phrase, or a string of numbers, or something like that. They don't mean anything. It's just a shirt with something on it. It happens all the time. But because
everything is racist.
They pulled this thing, reshot that particular part of the catalog, and reissued it. All because the guy is black and he's wearing a fashion t-shirt with a number on the front. That could be construed as racist because it looks like a prison uniform. No, it doesn't look like a prison uniform. The guy's got a splint on his finger. He's got a cast on his leg. He's standing there looking at something he's bought, and he's perplexed about how to put it together. He's not in prison. He's at home. You really do have to be stupid to buy into things like this. You just do. And speaking of stupid, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has come up with her reason for expanding the court. Are you ready for this? I mean, seriously. We talked about court packing briefly in the first segment, and now we're back around to it again. She cited population growth. Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, cited population growth while making a hypothetical case for adding justices to the Supreme Court, saying that perhaps the country needs more district courts as well to account for the larger population. Asked on MSNBC, which, by the way, is ignoring the Tony Bobulinski story completely, so you know they're credible. Asked on MSNBC whether she's open to efforts to add seats to the Supreme Court, known as packing the court, Pelosi left the question open. She said, "I think that Joe Biden has given us a good path. He's going to have something that people can understand why this is important." And this was just moments after the Senate voted to confirm Judge Amy Comey Barrett to the Supreme Court Monday evening. She continued by saying, "Not just the Supreme Court, but other courts. In 1876, there were 9 justices on the Supreme Court. Our population has grown enormously since then. Should we expand the court? Well, let's take a look and see." And that relates to the 9 district courts. Maybe we need more district courts as well. Okay, got it. It's not about revenge for the Barrett confirmation. Oh, no, no. It's not about gaming the system to get a liberal majority. Mm-mm, no, no, not that. No, you see, we've got so many darn people right now, we really need more justices to represent them all. That's a novel concept, especially because Supreme Court justices are not representatives of the people, per se. The judicial branch doesn't function in a representative capacity. It applies the law in cases between respective parties, and the law is the same no matter how much the population grows. So you can't tie the two together. Why a larger population would require a larger Supreme Court is a mystery to just about every honest person. I wonder if Pelosi followed up her pronouncement on this one by declaring, "Good morning, Sunday morning." Yeah, she usually makes about that much. Have you ever watched her Thursday pressers? Yeah, you should. They pop up on, I think they do pop up on YouTube. And if you're on Facebook, sometimes Facebook throws them out there. The Speaker of the House has a press briefing every Thursday morning. You could almost make a drinking game out of it. Just set the rules. If she stutters, if she stumbles, if she fights, verbally spars with somebody in the press, you'll come away. Trust me, I don't drink, but if you do, you'll be worthless for the rest of the day. You just will. Okay, for the sake of discussion, let's take Nancy Pelosi seriously. Just for a minute, okay? Let's assume she really does believe we need more Supreme Court justices because we have a larger population. Okay, if that's the case, why doesn't she propose it right now? Right now. Congress can convene for a lame duck session after the election. If this is such a big emergency, why doesn't Pelosi ask President Trump and Mitch McConnell to consider a bill before the end of 2020 to expand the Supreme Court? How about, say, 4 more justices? Then why doesn't Pelosi ask President Trump to nominate 4 more justices at the Republican Senate confirm immediately? That way, it'll all be taken care of before the next president and Congress are seated. If she really means it, it would make perfect sense to do it. She won't. You know why. Right now, they're all laying cover for Joe Biden. That's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to cover for something that is widely unpopular. Nobody is in favor of expanding the Supreme Court because they know exactly what it means. It's that illustration I already gave you. It's adding more officials to the field, but all of those officials graduated from one of the two schools that are competing in that particular football game. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. But nobody wants that to happen because they can see through it. And that's why they're laying cover. It's the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. And I've been scanning stuff. I decided to go over and look at... I already looked at BBC and CNBC. Nothing there. I thought, well, why not go over and look at NPR? Over at NPR.org. Let's see what NPR has. Are they talking about the story? Let's see here. On the... scroll to the top of the page. The last report card on the U.S. economy before elections will be a blockbuster. And this is actually a story about the coronavirus crisis. In politics, Trump has weaponized masculinity as president. Here's why it matters. A pandemic sticker shock. Used car prices are through the roof. 10 house races to watch. Mail-in voting rules by the state and the deadlines you need. So a newly sworn in Justice Barrett faces a motion to recuse herself in election case. Yeah, that'll never happen. The stuck at home moms. The pandemic's devastating toll on women. 2020 not scary enough. Try a haunted car wash. Wyoming using dark money to help keep coal plants in other states open. That's wow. Oh, yeah, but that coal, that's evil stuff. You know, if it weren't for coal, there'd be a lot of people dead in the world today. A lot. Coal is cheap energy. It's cheap heat. It's cheap ways to cook. It's cheap ways to keep a family and a home warm. It's a cheap method of preserving yourself in the cold months. And without it, a lot of people would be dead today. But you're not going to find the truth about that from the leftist press. They have to, especially people like NPR, they have to demonize coal. Are there better ways? Yeah, there are better ways. There are cleaner methods. Natural gas is much cleaner, and that's what fracking produces, but they want to end fracking. What else is there? A flood of outside money is pouring into 2020 races, alarming transparency advocates. Oddly enough, they won't be alarmed about the outside money coming into state races for Democrats. In the state of Alabama, I've been harping on how Doug Jones, who is one of the senators from the state of Alabama, is getting the lion's share of his funding from the West Coast and the East Coast, but not Alabama. And he's lying to the people of Alabama. He's disrespecting the people of Alabama, but he's running and I see his ads and I know all of the lies in his ads by now. And I know that the ads I'm seeing were paid for by money coming from wealthy people in California and in New York. And it's happening everywhere. But you don't see people like the folks at NPR talking about that. Let's see what else is COVID-19 weighing heavily on Arizona voters. What will that mean for Trump? Let's see the science behind worry, how it can calm your nerves. Where was that story I saw? Well, there was a story about women doctors, and it was, I'm looking for the, there it is. Female doctors spend more time with patients but earn less money than men. That's the headline. This is on NPR, npr.org. Female doctors spend more time with patients but earn less money than men. What does that tell you? The headline tells you that women doctors are paid less. Am I wrong about that? Isn't that what you get from the headline? Female doctors spend more time with patients but earn less money than men? Below the headline, it says this. Female physicians spend more time with each patient than male doctors do, and their patients report increased satisfaction. But the extra time adds up and results in less money. Oh! It's because they're seeing fewer patients. And each patient is money. So fewer patients equals less money. You see, it's not unfairness. Although the headline screams, unfair! It's not unfair. It's how they practice their profession. And they practice their profession in a way that leaves them seeing fewer patients, but doing a better job for their patients. And as a result of seeing fewer patients, less money is being paid to them. They're generating less income by seeing fewer patients. So what do? You change your method of operation to make as much money, or you do the job right? I say you do the job right. I'll just tell you this. During my off and on situation with my knees, I had, if you're just joining, you haven't heard the story. I'm not going to spend any time talking about it. I just had bad arthritis problems with both of my knees. In the last couple of years, I've had both of my knees replaced. But in the lead up to that, I spent time with male and female orthopedic surgeons, orthopedic doctors. And I will be honest with you. The female orthopedic doctor that I saw, who worked in the same practice as the surgeon, the male surgeon, spent more time with me, was kinder to me, joked with me more, was more personal, and was not a jerk. The man was. In fact, there was one time if I could have stood up at the time, I would have punched his lights out. In fact, I would have walked out of his office after punching his lights out, and I would have found another guy, because he was just, it's that old thing about doctors and surgeons thinking they're God. He just really rubbed me the wrong way, but she never did. So I think this holds true, that women doctors spend more time. They're more personable. They're satisfying their patients more than the men are, because the men are focused on the bottom line, the numbers. I got to see X number of patients in order to make this happen. You have they carve out this much time for you, and that's what you get from them. And if you've ever been in the exam room talking with somebody and you can tell they're tuned out, it's because they're thinking they're making less money. I hate to say that, but it's true. But the headline, female doctors spend more time with patients but earn less money than men. It's a dishonest headline. But that's NPR. Now, NPR is getting a lot of backlash for dismissing the reports about the Hunter Biden laptop. And, of course, other things as well, like Tony Bobulinski. NPR's ignoring it. They've ignored it, they say. They say they've been ignoring ongoing reporting surrounding this laptop and emails that purportedly belongs to Joe Biden's son and revealed his overseas business dealings. Their public editor, Kelly McBride, published an inquiry on its website last week from a listener who didn't understand why the outlet was ignoring the story. Quote, "Someone please explain why NPR has apparently not reported on the Joe Biden, Hunter Biden story in the last week or so, that Joe did know about Hunter's business connections in Europe and that Joe had previously denied having knowledge." That's what a listener, Carolyn Abbott, asked. McBride responded in saying there are many, many red flags in an investigation carried out by the New York Post, which last week published reports that were sourced from the alleged laptop hard drive. Actually, it'd be the week before that now. NPR then went on to repeat claims that Russia is attempting to interfere in the election. Quote, "Even if Russia can't be positively connected to this information, the story of how Trump associates Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani came into a copy of this computer hard drive has not been verified and seems suspect." Actually, there are others now who say, yeah, I have that same email. So they have verified the contents of the hard drives. So NPR is not correct. And if that story could be verified, the New York Post did no forensic work to convince consumers that the emails and photos that are the basis of their report have not been altered. But the biggest reason you haven't heard much on NPR about the Post story is that the assertions don't amount to much. Whew. Her response included a statement from NPR managing editor Terrence Samuel. Quote, "We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, and we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions." And quite frankly, that's where we ended up. This was a politically driven event, and we decided to treat it that way. So, NPR has decided that Tony Bobulinski and the contents of the laptop and all of this, which has a lot of people very concerned about Joe Biden's credibility and whether or not he is compromised, NPR, along with the rest of the mainstream press, has decided it's not a story. It's not a story. NPR is funded by your tax dollars, by the way. NPR is taking your money, and they are ignoring important information that the people need. It is far, far past time for us to stop funding NPR. They should stand on their own 2 feet and support themselves. But what would happen if they did that? we already know what would happen if they did that. There was already a satellite radio network that was all liberal. Air America. Look up Air America. And no, not on Wikipedia. Look up Air America and see what happened to Air America. Those who founded it, those who worked for it, were convinced that there were more people who were interested in listening to news stories and talk programs from a liberal perspective than there were from the conservative perspective. They were absolutely certain it was going to be a monstrous success. It died a whimpering, whining death because nobody cared about it. It didn't have the listener support. It couldn't sell itself out of a wet paper sack. It just couldn't. And if NPR was left to fend for itself without tax dollar support, then it wouldn't be long before those pledge drives that you hear on the public radio stations are not just a week now and then. They become constant. They would be constantly begging for money. And they would be constantly cutting back on their expenses. And it wouldn't take long for them to begin folding. Public radio stations would start dying. Except for maybe on the left coast and in New York, where they might have enough listener support to keep one or two of them up and running. But the bottom line is NPR can't survive without tax dollars, and they shouldn't. It's the final segment for this Wednesday, the 28th day of October. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Just the News and Rasmussen have done a poll, and you know Rasmussen, they tend to be the most reliable of the polling institutions. You can't trust really any of them when it comes to voting polls, how people are going to vote, because there's so many factors. But this is a question that's interesting. Most likely voters think social media platforms will censor information that may damage the Biden campaign leading up to the presidential election next week. According to the survey, about 57% of likely voters say the censorship of negative views surrounding Joe Biden or his son Hunter Biden will occur, compared to 29% who disagree. Among Democrats, 46% said Facebook and Twitter will censor information for Biden. That includes 50% of black voters and 69% of Latino voters who think social media companies will block unfavorable news about Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden before next Tuesday. Just the News Daily Poll with Scott Rasmussen conducted the poll from October 23rd to October 24th. It included 1,842 likely voters and used a mixed mode method. And among the respondents, 828 of them had already voted. So most people are aware they're not getting the information, all of the information from social media, because social media is covering for Joe Biden. Now, I said I wanted to talk with you a bit about the Electoral College, and I want to do that because PragerU published something yesterday that is a valuable resource, and it will be in today's show notes. So remember, go over to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and grab the show notes today so you can have this at your disposal. Here we go. Do you understand the Electoral College? Here's an essential overview of how it works and why we use it. The president and vice president of the United States are not chosen by a nationwide popular vote of the American people. Rather, they are chosen by 538 electors. This process is spelled out in the United States Constitution. Now, this is why, by the way, I say the United States doesn't have a popular vote. So when your friends, your liberal friends are all saying, yeah, but we lost the popular vote or he won the popular vote. There is no popular vote. There is no popular vote deciding the outcome of a presidential election. That's not how it works. Why didn't the founders just make it easy and let the presidential candidate with the most votes claim victory? Why did they create and why do we continue to need this Electoral College? The answer is critical to understanding not only the Electoral College, but also America. The founders had no intention of creating a pure majority rule democracy. They knew from careful study of history that most have forgotten what most have forgotten today or never learned. Pure democracies do not work. They implode. Democracy has been colorfully described as two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner. In a pure democracy, bare majorities can easily tyrannize the rest of a country. The founders wanted to avoid this at all costs. This is why we have three branches of government: executive, legislative, and judicial. It's why each state has two senators, no matter what its population, but also different numbers of representatives based entirely on population. It's why it takes a supermajority in Congress and three-quarters of the states to change the Constitution. And it's why we have the Electoral College. Here is how the Electoral College works. The presidential election happens in two phases. The first phase is purely democratic. We hold 51 popular elections every presidential election year, one in each state and one in the District of Columbia. On election day in 2012, you may have thought you were voting for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, but you were really voting for a slate of presidential electors. In Rhode Island, for example, if you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for the state's four Democratic electors. If you voted for Mitt Romney, you were really voting for the state's four Republican electors. Part two of the election is held in December, and it is why this December election along with the state's 538 electors, not the November election, which officially determines the identity of the next president. At least 270 votes are needed to win. Why is this so important? Because the system encourages coalition building and national campaigning. In order to win, a candidate must have the support of many different types of voters from various parts of the country. Winning only the South or the Midwest is not good enough. You can't win 270 electoral votes in only one part of the country if only one part of the country is supporting you. But if winning were only about getting the most votes, a candidate might concentrate all of his efforts in the biggest cities or the biggest states. Why would that candidate care about what people in West Virginia or Iowa or Montana think? But, you might ask, isn't the election really only about the so-called swing states? Actually, no. If nothing else, safe and swing states are constantly changing. California voted safely Republican as recently as 1988. Texas used to vote Democrat. Neither New Hampshire nor Virginia used to be swing states. Most people think that George W. Bush won the 2000 election because of Florida. Well, sort of. But he really won the election because he managed to flip one state, which the Democrats thought was safe, West Virginia. West Virginia's four electoral votes turned out to be decisive. No political party can ignore any state for too long without suffering the consequences. Every state, and therefore every voter in every state, is important. The Electoral College also makes it harder to steal elections. Votes must be stolen in the right state in order to change the outcome of the Electoral College. With so many swing states, this is hard to predict and hard to do. But without the Electoral College, any vote stolen in any precinct in the country could affect the national outcome. Even if that vote was easily stolen in the bluest California precinct or the reddest Texas precinct. The Electoral College is an ingenious method of selecting a president for a great, diverse republic such as our own. It protects against the tyranny of the majority, encourages coalition building, and discourages voter fraud. Our founders were proud of it. We can be too. And that's the article from Prager. As I said, it will be listed in the show notes today. And I think it's something you should copy and paste into a document and save for yourself. Possibly copy the link and send to other people so they can understand. The Electoral College is important for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons that was stated in the article is about the diversity of the country. Whoever's running for the president has to represent all of these people, not just some of them. This person running, whether it's a guy or a gal, man or a woman, they have to campaign and build the coalitions necessary, with a broad variety of people from different backgrounds. And different views on things. Alabama is different than Georgia, and they're right next to each other. The city of Birmingham and the city of Atlanta are different. Georgia is different from North Dakota. North Dakota is different from New Hampshire. They're all different in their own ways. They see things in different ways. Their people work in different fields, different industries, different businesses. And so they see life in America from different perspectives. So if you live in some small parish in Louisiana, do you want the popular vote to govern what happens to you and yours in your state when life in your small parish in Louisiana is extremely different than it is in Los Angeles or New York? No, you don't want those people making your decisions for you because everything is different where you live. I heard a great illustration not long ago. Imagine this was the world stage. And the popular vote was determining the leadership for the entire planet, not just one country. And it was decided by the popular vote. The popular vote would decide who would be the president of the world, with candidates coming from every country on earth. Which country would end up having their representative as president? It would be communist China. because of the population, the popular vote, we would be under the leadership of a communist. A communist leader would be governing the entire world. To which you say, yeah, but we'd have a government that wouldn't let that happen. Really? We have a government that won't let that happen. It's a representative republic. And we have an electoral college which protects us from the tyranny of the majority. Remember that illustration? Two wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner? The tyranny of the majority. See, life is very different for the wolves than it is for the lamb. Just like life is very different for people in East Podunk, Arkansas, than it is for people in Los Angeles, California, or New York, New York. The opinions and the outlooks of the people living in different places all have to be considered, which is why we have an electoral college. The popular vote, honestly, is childish. And we're a lot better than that. We really are. We're the greatest nation on earth. And the Electoral College is one reason for that. Hey, that's it for today. Let's get back together tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.